And our special guest, Dr. Rick Sheffer, taking phone calls this hour as we talk about his work, Joyfully Shattered. And we'll come right back to you next on Coast to Coast AM. We're back with Dr. Rick Sheffer. And, of course, he wrote the book, Joyfully Shattered, and he has gone through an experience that shattered his old belief system. He was an atheist. He's not anymore. How do you feel about that, Rick? Does it feel differently for you?
Oh, it's tremendously different, and that's why the title is Joyfully Shattered, because when I experienced what happened when I allowed the truth to shatter my old web of belief, it opened my heart, and it opened my soul. It opened me to prayer. It opened me to my fellow human being as even more deeply loving, and it opened me to what today I can language as God.
You talk about a coming new paradigm. What is that?
So paradigm shifts are a normal part of science. And again, I mentioned the work of Thomas Kuhn and his book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And if we think of the shift in the paradigm from when Aristotle had taught us that the Earth was the center of the universe, and Copernicus said, well, what if we put the sun at the center? That was a huge paradigm shift. And then we ended that shift ended when Newton figured it all out with gravity and calculus and said, oh, now we have the Newtonian paradigm. And that gave us the Industrial Revolution and wonderful things that came from that. And there were literally scientists at the end of the 19th century who were just bemoaning the fact that all the major discoveries had already been made. We'd figured out electromagnetism and thermodynamics and the Newtonian system, and it was done. And it was only within 10 years that Einstein taught us that space and time are not as we thought they were. And so the question for us is, do we think today we have the final paradigm in, you know, quantum mechanics and general relativity? And the answer is no. In fact, those two are technically, and I'm not an expert in this, but as I understand, those two are technically not fully compatible with each other. And we're trying to get the unified theory and M theory. But does anybody think that is the ultimate final paradigm? And the answer is no. The coming new paradigm, and this is where science done well, I think, is getting very exciting, is going to show us that what today we take as spiritual, the impact of prayer and intention, communication at a distance, precognition, these are actually studyable. And in fact, there's brilliant work done by a number of scientists in a number of different disciplines. I want to highlight the work of Professor William Tiller, who is the chairman of the Material Science Department at Stanford. And he has done brilliant work, and I talk about this in the book, and there's a chapter in the book called When Science Meets God, A Glimpse into the Coming New Paradigm. And it's really trying to point us in the direction of where this new scientific period of revolutionary science is taking us. And then I have an expanded version of that chapter on my website at www.ricksheffmd.com. That's a free download, because some people want more of the science.
Oh, they do. That's
very exciting. And he's showing that scientifically, through human intention, you can change things like the pH of a solution in a beaker, or the activity of an enzyme in a test tube, or even the activity of some normal biological processes in a living organism. And he's got the data. And if this can be replicated by others, and it's very important that this be done, I believe this will do for confirming this coming new paradigm what, say, finding antimatter, the antiparticle to the electron, did for confirming quantum mechanics. I think this is the time for a huge paradigm shift, and it's very exciting.
Are you familiar with the work of the late Dr. Emoto, who would work on water crystals and look at them under a microscope after bombarding them with music?
Yes, I am.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He would take, you know, what we would consider to be mellow music and play it, and then freeze water and look at it under a microscope, and it looked gorgeous. And then he'd play harder music, and he'd do the same thing, and it would be all jumbled up under a microscope. It would be scattered, and it just would not look attractive. Truly amazing what you could do.
It is, and here's one of the really challenging and stunning pieces about, we have so much faith in science, and yet when you look at his work and go, wow, that's amazing. Has anyone tried to replicate it? Where are the conferences talking about this? How does the scientific establishment engage this and discuss it? And there's this huge chasm.
Oh, it's so big. It's a great story.
It is. And I talk about this in the book. There's research on hypnosis and regression that gets us to past life experiences. And even, and I write about this because I've had this experience, the time between lives and what we can learn from that. And it's extraordinary and it's challenging. And methodologically, I'm reading it critically and going, oh, where are the symposia on this? And because if this can be proven to be true and replicated, then this is as important a scientific breakthrough as anything in the history of humanity. We all want to know what happens after we die, and if this can help us understand, and why is science not even engaging this? It's the bias, it's the prejudice within science. Now, I think we need to look at it as serious scientists and look at the methodology and drive out bias and drive out influence to the best of our ability from the researchers. But even an interesting part of the new paradigm is that if we take seriously that human intention, and let me back this up. Bill Tiller said this beautifully, Professor William Tiller. He said, what is the assumption behind Western science that, if it were found not to be the case, would allow us to have science look at this stuff and work with it? And he framed it beautifully, and I talk about this in the book. He says, when what we assume, and this has been an assumption of Western science for more than 400 years, that human intention cannot impact the results of a well-designed experiment. And we as scientists, we've taken that for granted until he pointed that out to us. And then we go, well, wait a minute. What if the way the world works is that human intention, prayer, can change our, call it four-dimensional space-time world? Then we have to take into account the intention of the researcher. And we see this in the placebo effect and blinding and double blinding, but what if you can't take it out completely? And that causes us to say, well, what would science done well look like if we took that seriously? And I think that's part of the coming new paradigm as well.
Let's take some calls for you, Rick, and I've got more questions too. But Mary in East Los Angeles, welcome to the program. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I had an oh God experience in December 10th. 1986.
What happened?
Reagan and Gorbachev were talking about the INF treaty at exactly the same time that my Toyota van filled with light. And it was as if I was in another planet or another, like, heaven. And I don't know how I didn't have an accident because I was driving. And the next thing you know, right between, on Orchard Road, between two churches, I heard the voice, and it sounded like Ed Asner, not...
Well, he could be the voice of God. You never know.
Well, I keep telling Ed, come on, play me. I did the movie. I wanted to do it. And he says, you think I gave you a little contest that you could get on TV and go talk about housework? You don't even do housework, because I was supposed to be on TV the next day on the Will Schreiner Show, because I won a contest about why my life was so silly, like a sitcom. And I said, who are you, God? And he says, I like to be called the Lord. And I said, what do you want? He says, those bozos in Washington are getting nowhere.
God said the bozos?
Those bozos. Reagan and Gorbachev. He said, their male egos are in the way. It's up to you to help them, and you must warn the world about nuclear annihilation. I said, I'm just a housewife. He says, I know. You have nothing better to do all day than to help me. And I swear, from that moment on, I became a peace person.
Well, good for you.
What?
Good for you.
I know, but now whenever I try to go back to being like a normal person.
Hey, by the way, what do you mean God said that you're a normal housewife, you don't have anything better to do? That's a tough job, too.
No, but he was being ironic. He was joking with me.
Oh.
And then I said, well, why me? Why not Irma Baumbach or Oprah? They're important.
Sure.
And he says, because I like you.
So what did you do? What did you do to solve the problems of the planet?
I joined WAND, Women Against Nuclear Disarmament.
All right.
And down the line, I actually met Helen Caldicott. I wrote letters to the editor, and they always got in. This is the first time.
And you're not
ever.
Giving up, right?
What?
You haven't given up.
This is the first time, and many, many times that I've tried calling. First time I ever got on. That's my proof that there's a God.
There's a miracle right there.
This is proof, and I've got goosebumps upon goosebumps, and I'm like, you know, I'm convinced that this is what I have to do. But every time I try to do something other than this, I'm steered back into.
Well, Mary, you just told millions of people what you do, and you're getting the word out. Now, Rick, let me ask you this. So let's assume God did come to her. You know, when next hour, by the way, Neil Donald Walsh is going to join me, and, you know, he wrote a book in his car from conversations with God. I guess these things do happen, don't they?
Well, Mary, first of all, congratulations on an experience where you got a higher calling. And I think that's important for all of us to really come to, why am I here? We all deeply question that, and particularly if we go through a time of crisis, as I said, illness or loss, the deeper questions about our life and how we choose to live it, and what we want our legacy to be, come to the fore. And I think in those moments, if we are open, the way I would describe Mary's experience is she got guidance. And understanding the source of that guidance, I don't know the full source. I think science can help us get there, whether that was God, and I hold that it could have been something else like a spirit guide or whatever, but I would honor Mary's experience and say I don't have to have an explanatory theory that fully accounts for it to say that is her truth, and it brought her to a purpose in her life that was greater than her own life. And I think that is part of opening, part of being of service, and I believe we are here on this planet, and the purpose of our lives is to grow, is to open, is to be of service to others, be of service, if this word works for you, to be of service to God, and it's all about love. So Mary, thank you for the work you've done on behalf of nuclear disarmament. The world needs more Marys doing this work.
I sure do. Unfortunately, the planet doesn't have enough people like her. And when does that change, Rick?
Well, this is what I'm finding is really an exciting part of this time. This is a very challenging time in human history. We are more connected than we ever have been. We have violence everywhere we turn, and it makes the nightly news because it sells. What doesn't sell is the fact that all throughout the world, in every country I have visited, there are people who are pursuing this kind of transformation. There are people hungry for their spiritual development. And those are the people for whom I've written this book. It's really so they can find validation. I mean, the book is filled with stories, and the feedback I get is people laugh with the stories, they cry with the stories, but at the end they come away inspired because
that's what
about
it's all about.
Their journey too, and we all need to do this. And I'm finding all across our planet, there are movements of people seeking to connect with something higher, a deeper meaning in their life, with spirituality, and to act from that place and to make this a better world. And I believe we are at an inflection point, and I truly hope that is taking us in this positive direction for consciousness throughout our planet.
Rick, our next caller is like you were. He's an atheist. It's Bill, the astronomer from West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, hi, doctor. Yes, hi. I'm Bill. I'm age 66, just turned 66 last month. And I've been an atheist since 1970 when I was age 20, and I am an amateur astronomer. So I'm an amateur scientist, and I know science, especially space science and astronomy and physics. And what I want to say, first of all, I did have an out-of-body experience way back in 1988. I was an atheist before then, of course, and still an atheist today. Secondly, I think that book that you mentioned that someone wrote, When Science Meets God, or something like that title, it should have been written, When Science Meets what we now call, as well as what we used to call, God. Because I think spiritual things, spirituality, spiritual and religious, and especially supernatural, are really natural things that modern science does not understand yet in 2016, that we will understand whether it's 10 years from now or 20 years or 50 years or more. And I think my point is, I'll take one example, near-death experiences. I've gotten information from IANS, which I know you're aware of, International Association of Near-Death Studies. I don't think it's spiritual or religious, heaven or hell or God. What it is the mind, not the word soul, but the word mind, M-I-N-D, maybe can exist once the body dies in another dimension or another universe, an energy dimension or an energy universe that's not literally heaven or hell. So there's not literally a heaven or a hell or a God or Jesus Christ or any of that. Because, for example, with Jesus would have to have been a woman if he was born to a virgin, because, as you know, as a doctor, it's the male sperm that determines the sex of the offspring. So a Virgin Mary would only have the egg with no sperm. So the offspring, if it could have existed with the mind of God, say, if there were a God, it would have to have been female, a woman.
Unless, Bill, he was genetically altered by the people up there.
Well, let me see if I can respond to Bill.
Because okay.
Bill, first of all, I totally appreciate where you're coming from.
I love you. He's a great caller.
Yeah, no,
but he's totally like you were. He's an atheist.
He is with a twist. And I am in agreement with Bill that much of what today we call spiritual will be integrated as part of science showing us how the world works. And part of where he was taking us is to the thought that there is something, he called it mind, we might call it mind, we might call it consciousness, that persists after we die. And this is where I think, Bill, I'd invite you to think about what you're saying with a little more critical thought, because there is a hint of scientism in what you're doing, not just science. Because when we start to go towards consciousness, and say, well, how does consciousness exist? Then we get into some wondrous and mysterious stuff. I think science can help us understand that. But then you went to trying to explain away a virgin birth, and I'm not here to say it happened or didn't happen, because that's part of one particular religious tradition, and some believe that and some don't. But then you went to the thing that said, well, you got to have an X and a Y chromosome, therefore a virgin birth would have had to have had a daughter as a result. And I would just caution you, because you've made an assumption there that consciousness, whatever that is, or God or spirituality, any of those other phenomena, cannot change our physical being. And that's an assumption. That's a hypothesis that is not proven. And when you take the work of some of the scientists who are studying the impact of consciousness and intention on phenomena that can be measured, we find, wow, you really can impact the physical world. So I think I'd caution you not to be so sanguine, so sure in that kind of line of argument. I think the excitement of science done well, showing that what today we call spiritual will one day be integrated, that's why I call it my awakening, the crossroads of science and spirituality, and I think there will be pieces that go beyond that that probably are not going to be incorporated into science as we know it today. And I could be wrong. It may all come to science, and science may one day demonstrate how it all comes together, but it will be a far more wondrous and mysterious picture than we have of it.
I've got to tell you, too, Rick, as a scientist and as a medical doctor, it's refreshing to hear you talk this way.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be refreshing.
It is refreshing.
I'm actually doing a series of YouTube videos on just sort of little snippets of this, so people can get that there really is a way to be rational and scientific and integrate these pieces, not be weird, and get serious about it.
All right, well, let's talk more about your website when we come back. Your book is Joyfully Shattered, and we'll take final phone calls. And we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Rick Sheff, author of Joyfully Shattered, and we're going to take final phone calls as well right here on Coast to Coast AM. And good to have you back with Dr. Rick Sheff, our final segment here as we talk about his work, Joyfully Shattered. And Rick, take a few moments to tell us where we can get your book and give out your website again.
Well, thank you. The website is www.rickcheffmd.com. As I said earlier, that's SHEFF, no C. And there, you can get the book there. It's available in hard copy, ebook. The audiobook version has just come out with me reading it. There are also, I've just created two guided meditation CDs that there's availability for pre-purchase, and they're free downloads. The expanded chapter on science, when science meets God, and a guided meditation is available there, and the blog. And also the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the other usual outlets in hard copy and ebook format as well. And the audiobook will be out hopefully in other outlets shortly.
I would guess, Doctor, you're not going to stop at just this book. What's next for you?
Well, that's interesting because the whole journey has been, I describe this in the book, it's been a path. And being open to asking the question, what's the next step on this path? That's what got me to Oneness University. That's what got me to John of God. That's what got me to Medjugorje. I talk about doing a Course in Miracles in the book. And each of those was a step on the path. And the question is, what's the next step? And that's a question of discernment and waiting to see what emerges. I have made a commitment to be of service. And that has taken the form of professing vows as a monk to pray for the world. And I do that with my heart. And I have offered to say, where else is the next place to be of service? And if it's another book, I will do that. If people want me to do workshops, I'm starting to offer one-day workshops. And if anyone wants to sponsor that, I'm happy to do that. It's what is next to help all of us on our own path, and ultimately help shift, and I'm now comfortable using words like shift the consciousness of all of us on the planet. I believe we are connected in a shared way, in a shared consciousness. We have an individual experience of our consciousness, and yet we are connected in ways that we are just beginning to learn about. And I think when any one person makes progress on their path of opening their heart, of being of service to others, we all make progress. So I'm wide open. I suspect there are more books coming, but I'm waiting to see what the next direction is and then pursue that.
Do you think 10 years from now, 20 years from now, people will be more enlightened? They will be more receptive to where we are right now?
I think if you look back 20 years ago and ask that question back then, we'd say today, wow, back then they were weird, they were new age, they were on the fringe. Today, you've got mainstream people and scientists like me saying, this is the way the world works. This is the way to be in the world. And I think 20 years from now, this is going to be a worldwide, continued, growing phenomenon. And I truly hope that is the case. And I will do everything I can to help make that be the case, because our shared humanity needs it.
Okay, let's go back to the phones now. George in Detroit, welcome to the show, George.
Hi, George. I just had one of those funny coincidences that you don't believe in happened to me.
What
happened?
On
the line, you went into a commercial about Carnivora,
mm-hmm.
and you said, hello, George. And so I thought you were saying, hello, George. I almost answered.
You started talking.
That's kind of funny coincidence. Anyways, since Bill came out, I wanted to address that real quick, what he was saying about the, you know, XX chromosome of the woman and the XY of the male. And I think that the miraculous birth of Jesus by God, who created human beings and female and male and X and Y chromosomes and all that, was able to provide, especially since he's considered male, even though males have estrogen hormones and females have testosterone, that he was able to provide that Y chromosome without too much trouble, if you consider that he's God. Anyways, the scripture, I'm sure you've heard it, that comes to my mind is, people are ever learning and never coming to the knowledge of the truth. They learn many things, but they accept things that they think are true, but they aren't necessarily true. Now, how does Jesus and what he said about being the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes unto the Father but by him, how does that fit? And now a lot of people say, well, that's where the problem comes in, because people are fighting of my religion's right and yours is wrong. Well, I have no religion. Jesus didn't come to start a religion. I have faith in Christ, and I have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and he is truth and life itself. So I'm not saying I'm right, follow me, and you're wrong, I can't listen to you. I'm saying Christ is right, he is the truth, and I'm wrong until I line up with him, and everyone else is wrong until they line up with him. And he's not excluding anyone. He said, whosoever will come to me is welcome. I welcome you. I'll not cast you out if you come to me. So how does that fit into the idea of reincarnation also? You know, why did he go to the cross and suffer on our behalf for our sins to reconcile us to God, when if reincarnation says, well, I'll just come back if I blow it this time, I learn some lessons, and then next time I learn a few more lessons, and finally I'll get it right, and then I'll aspire to nirvana. Well, there's no need for Christ to come and pay the price that he did. It renders his mission, his main goal that he came here for, was the greatest of teachers and healers, but the main reason he came was to lay down his life and to take it up again, well, to give us eternal life.
Maybe he wants to minimize the amount of times we have to come back over and over again. I don't know. Rick, you want to get involved in that?
Yeah, so let me respond to George with a couple of pieces. First of all, this is, let's be clear, this works for you, and it is your web of belief. And I have no desire to change it. And if it works for you and it helps you live a good and loving life, congratulations.
So be it.
And the challenge is, it is a web of belief. And George, you've been talking about faith, and to say my web of belief is right and someone else's is wrong, that's where it begins to cross a line. And we can hold, for example, the story, the history of Jesus, and that is something that is part of a tradition that has become the foundation of, yes, you said it, a religion. And religions, let's be clear, these are eventually become a body of beliefs that can get rigidified. They get into institutions. They are led by people who have all the foibles of being a human being, and the politics and the power and the money and control that we have seen religions do throughout history, that, you know, everyone can pursue whatever works for them. And I do not have to criticize anyone's religious beliefs. But to turn around and say, therefore, through that filter, this is true and something else is not true, and just to hold with humility, that's part of your web of belief. And I support your ability to hold that web of belief. We all do. No one can get outside of their own web of belief. And so I would encourage that there are many paths, and many of them religious, many paths to living a good life, a loving life, being of service. And if this is the language that works for you, connecting to something ultimate, call it God, call it spirit, divine source, there are many different ways to do that, and I think it's important that we find what unifies us, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to open our hearts to all of us and to really love each other, which is the primary teaching that Jesus taught, and I fully support that.
Why, Rick, in the name of God, are there so many religions that are violent? And many of them were very violent in the earlier days.
I think that there's a combination there. First of all, if you go back to how we are wired genetically, and we do have genes, and we are wired genetically very clearly to develop in-groups and out-groups because it was a survival advantage. And again, I'll say that as part of my web of belief, and I think biology and anthropology and other fields will support that, that we are exquisitely sensitive to in-group and out-group dynamics. And that's probably hardwired in our genes. And so when we start to then manifest that in a religion, we are hardwired to say, my religion, not your religion. And then we do have part of our hardwiring, and part of what we're here with is strong emotions. And they include love, and what we're talking about is service, but also fear and anger, and how those come together has created the mix in our history And it's very sad, and we all know that that's very sad, and that's part of what I hope this work will bring to us, which is a way to step beyond the boundaries from one religion to another that cause or stimulate us to act in such negative ways with each other. I see the beauty in all religions. I see the beauty in this spiritual path, and I hope over time that that will be more and more shared, and this negative side will become less and less pronounced. And I see evidence that that is happening. I also see evidence of a rise in this negativity of one religion against another. And that's why I think we all need to do what Mary was doing in her calling, which is to say, how can I personally be of service to help bring peace and love to my fellow human beings and to this planet? And that, I believe, is what we're here to do.
All right, let's go to Walter and Graham Washington on the wildcard line. Hello, Walter, go ahead.
Hello, yes. I was calling to ask if he had studied Lourdes at all when he was trying to get his son healed, because like last night, ironically, I was searching for an answer, and last night I was watching a TV show, and they showed one of the first miracles at Lourdes. And I had an experience where I believe I was revived from the dead. And when the person in Lourdes was revived from the dead, something picked her up and lifted her off the ground, physically like under her arms. And I've been trying to figure this out, and that's what happened to me. I was trying to tell people it felt like a beam or a wave picked me up off the ground. And so anyway, it encouraged me because last night I saw this about Lourdes, and so it turns out to be something holy that happened to me, if that's what happened. But anyway, did he study Lourdes and find out if any of that healing was real, or did you think that it might be real, or do you even know about Lourdes?
Well, Lourdes has got a magnificent property out there. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, so, and I'm sorry, I didn't get the caller's name.
The caller's name is Walter.
Walter. So, Walter, thank you. I have not studied Lourdes. I am aware of Lourdes. It is one of the places that a vision of Mary has been seen, manifested, and miracles have ensued. And that turns out to have happened in countless other places throughout the world. So the question comes up is, what happened there? Is there some power to heal and to help people from whether the water of Lourdes or the beliefs there or the processes?
Or is it intent, Rick? Is it intention?
Or is it intent? Is it the power of prayer? And I think the answer is, I can't speak for one place over another. There are plenty of stories of people who've had miraculous healings related to Lourdes and a number of other places. And going back to Bill's call that says, maybe one day science will show us, oh, that's how that worked, through intention and prayer and possible intervention from a source other than our four-dimensional space-time, or it may remain a mystery. And I'm open to those mysteries. I don't dismiss them. I celebrate them. So I celebrate your healing, and I celebrate all those who've had healings from these kinds of experiences. And I don't poo-poo them. I don't say, if I can't reduce it to a particular explanatory theory, therefore it didn't happen. I say, wow, that's a fascinating data point. And how does that fit with the other data points to help us understand how the world really works?
And how does the world really work, Rick? I'm not sure anybody knows anymore.
Well, I think we're getting there. I'm not a nihilist that says nobody knows. I believe in science. I think science done well helps us get to a shared web of belief that is closer and closer to the truth. But let me also perhaps end with this piece of it, because one of the things we do is we think that knowing something scientifically is the highest of human endeavors, the highest human intelligence. And what I'm finding on my journey and my path is it's wonderful. I believe in science and logic and data. But I think we have another source of our intelligence, which is our heart. It's our capacity to love. And if we do not make science subservient to love, to our heart's guidance, then we're in danger of science running amok, and we've seen examples of that. So I want, and I believe actually the new paradigm will include that love and our heart is also part of our intelligence, and that science needs to serve love. And to the extent it does that, we will create a better planet.
Let's go to Charles in Baltimore now. Welcome to the program, and good morning, Charles.
Good morning. Question. Mother is plateauing. Well, she's ill. She's dying. She's plateauing. And the grief is starting, even though she's not even dead now. No, I'm not angry or upset that she's gone, because, hey, how many people in their 60s still have their parents? No, at least one parent.
That's right.
And she lived like she's 93. She'll be 94 in May if she lives. And, you know, how can I process all this? Because the grief is starting to hit all of us, you know, me, my sister, my nieces. And, you know, she's not even gone. And like I said, I'm not angry or bitter, or I'm not asking why, because I already know why.
And again, the caller's name, please.
Charles.
Charles. Okay, so Charles, first of all, my heart goes out to you. You are losing your mother. And that is a very, very painful experience. And we all go through it. Actually, we hope we all go through it, because then it's in the proper order rather than the mother losing the child. So you asked, how do you deal with the grief? And I think this is a deep question that everyone who experiences a loss of someone they love, and it could be a loss through death, a loss of a relationship, a loss of their own well-being, we struggle to make meaning of this. And as a doctor, I had to give bad news to patients and be with them as they die. And actually, one of the stories I write about in the book is about that, being with the family as a child is dying, and how to help them find a way to be with it. And I think there are a couple of pieces. One is the psychologists call this doing the work of grieving. And grief work is work. And there is a process where as someone dies and after they die, you need to feel those experiences, those feelings. You need to tell the stories, the tears flow, and share them with people who knew your mother. And today, before she's dying, share them with people who know and love her. And doing that psychological work is very important for grieving. But then also being open to allowing this experience potentially to help you grow beyond that, to have compassion for others as they experience pain and loss. And that opens your heart to others and allows you to love them more deeply. And then the next level is to say, is there a way this experience helps you to open to something bigger than yourself? And that is where we open to, why are we here, and what deeper messages can you get, guidance, discernment, that will help you on your path. So my heart goes out to you, and I wish you and your family all the best.
Rick, as we wrap things up, good luck with the book. The fact that, you know, you're a medical doctor and you've taken this plunge or this step, I think it's fascinating. I really do. You ought to be commended.
Thank you very much, George. Really appreciate the opportunity to be with you and your audience.
And I hope it sells like hotcakes.
Me too. Thank you. And really, I want that because I want as many people as possible to experience this and to have it touch them and help them on their path.
All right. You take care of yourself. Dr. Rick Sheff, when we come back in a moment, well, he's going to be back with us. Neil Donald Walsh, author of Conversations with God. An incredible story. He'll tell you a little bit about it. Those of you who are brand new to the show and you've never heard him, we'll talk about how these things happened to him in his life. So lots going on right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter if you would.